And we start with this, a prayer from Philippians 1, starting in verse 9. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. As we're closing out this series on refocus, here's a couple things. Refocus means being honest with ourselves, being honest about our loves, and refocusing them back in line with God. It means living into the conversion story, our baptism. Our baptism means something. It means something today. It means something right now. It is not just a get-out-of-hell-free card. It means no longer practicing dual citizenship, but becoming citizens of heaven. We begin to do this as our focus is refocused on the beauty of what we practice together in the congregation. And in the end, refocusing is a disentangling of the old ways. It is leading us towards seeing the world through a different lens. And as we see the world through a different lens, this will move us into our new series beginning next week, which we're calling Reconnect. Renewing our love of neighbor. Because if you've noticed, we've been in that Luke 10 passage starting in verse 23, and we've ended at verse 28. But what we're going to do is, starting next week, we're going to move to verse 29, when the lawyer looks at Jesus and says, "What? So who exactly is my neighbor?" And we're going to look at that question for a little bit. Who is my neighbor? And what we're called to be in this world. But as we close, we're in Romans 12, starting in verse 14. And what we, I think, have to, as we look at this, is understand this, that between the intersection of Roman life and the way of Jesus is where the believers find themselves, like most of us today, between the intersection of American life and the way of Jesus, we find ourselves. And as these Roman Christians' lives were being refocused by God in Jesus through the Holy Spirit, their question is, how do they live in a world on an everyday level? Especially when the Romans were living in a culture of Pax Romana. Now, who in here has heard of this phrase, Pax Romana? Anybody have heard of this? This is kind of the culture of Rome. Pax Romana was a time of peace and tranquility within the Roman Empire. But for the Roman people to experience this peace, they had to endure years of civil war. And so when we hear the word Pax Romana, it literally means Roman peace. But as one historian said, the Roman slogan could actually have been, "If you want peace, prepare for war." If you want peace, prepare for war. And so this Pax Romana, this kind of slogan, became this embedded Roman identity. Peace could only be attained if victory could happen over another. And so through this lens, others had to be controlled. They had to be manipulated. Others who were different than the Romans became an enemy, because if they didn't follow the Roman way, then they followed something other than Rome, then they must be subjected. They must be stripped of their power. And so whatever victory looked like, Pax Romana was this statement to say that we would have victory over you, and when we had victory over you, then peace could reign in the world. And so Paul starts Romans 12, verse 14, with these words. And if you think about, if the Roman slogan is, if you want peace, prepare for war, hear the words of verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Imagine hearing these words as a first century Roman. It flies in the face of everything that you have learned in your seventh and eighth grade classes in Roman history. Rome didn't build itself on this mantra, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. That's not the mantra that these students had learned. Rome didn't become the envy of the world by sitting back and doing nothing. And one can imagine how, as the listeners heard Paul say these words in a letter, how it penetrated their hearts. Everything they had learned up until this moment in school and in their families is now being flipped on its head. Paul's not just asking the community, he's not just asking the congregation to be different, but also for them to be different. That they were going to be treat one another differently. That inside the congregation, what they did with each other, what we talked about last week, had implications on what they would do when they walked outside of the congregation. Paul was putting a virus into this system that had been hardwired into them for so long. He was putting this virus into them that said, when you leave here, you will actually go by a different mantra than the one that you have been. And so Paul, as he begins this Romans 12, 14 through 21, he actually takes the words of Rome. He actually takes this kind of militaristic idea of Rome and this Pax Romana, and he uses the same type metaphors. But what he does is he subtly transforms the language. And you'll notice it as we read this section of text that Paul will say, if you want to conquer someone, you love them. If you want to conquer someone, you bring them to your house and you feed them a meal. And what we notice is Paul doesn't run away from those military metaphors. He actually uses the military metaphors, but changes the battle language for the church and says your battle language will be love above everything else. And so Paul sets out before the Roman community to provide a new framework to engage with one another. And so I think what we can see in this last sermon is if our life is refocused towards God, if we become one who allows God to penetrate our very soul and reorder our loves, that tells us to live into our conversion, then what Paul is telling us is this, is that you will begin to live differently in your neighborhoods. And so Paul begins this section of the text in verse 14 with the words, bless towards those who deserve a divine curse. In this statement, Paul invokes the very words of Jesus, the very words of Jesus that we read in Matthew 6 of the Good Samaritan, the very words of Jesus that we read in Jesus' Sermon on the Plain in Luke. And within this framework, if you remember Jesus speaking, Jesus was bringing to the society an alternative way of practicing life with one another. Blessing and not cursing the persecutor was going to be the embodiment of this good news in the world. That peace would not have to come because of war or through war, but instead that peace would come through the embodiment of Jesus in the good news. And so the teachings of Jesus were more than just a theory. And I think that's sometimes what we think, that the teachings of Jesus were more than just a good idea, but that the teachings of Jesus were to be the sanctifying practices of the community. What Jesus was saying is that these will now be the practices of all those who call on my name. It wasn't just, hey, you know what? If you think it's a good idea, this was going to be who we are. The text continues with Paul's desire for the people to live in harmony. Verse 16, live in harmony with one another. Or as one commentator interprets this text, and I think I like this interpretation as well, being of the same mind towards each other. And I think I like that because what that invokes is that first part of Romans 12, verse 1, where there's this transforming of the mind. But being of one mind, and if we think about what Paul is speaking here, I believe Paul is bringing to bear the Christ hymn of Philippians 2. You know that hymn I'm talking about in Philippians 2? Who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place. And as we know, Paul says that one day all of heaven and earth shall confess that Jesus is Lord. I think Paul, as he says, live in harmony with one another in verse 16, he's trying to bring in the Christ hymn to say your mind will be like Christ. So the community will become, the congregation will become this kind of self-emptying community. We will empty ourselves. We will see others as better than ourselves. Think of that simple phrase. Thinking of someone else as better than you. Don't think there's much more of a revolutionary statement than that, even in our time. In a world that tells us, in a culture that tells us, that you have to be better than fill in the blank, Paul says, as the refocusing is happening in your life, your neighbor will be seen as better than you. Therefore, you will treat as such. And we begin to see that Paul is slowly talking to this Roman church, a Roman church that has lived in this Roman peace. War will bring peace. And Paul is slowly putting in a different spirit and saying there's going to be a different mantra that will motivate you, that will animate you. And it starts with bless and do not curse. This Christ ethos, this Christ spirit does not stop inside the community, because what could be very easy, and I think sometimes what we do is we get these one another statements and we think about just one another, right? Inside the church, one another. But Paul doesn't stop there in verse 16. Paul actually keeps going. And Paul makes a move here. And I don't know if you noticed it, but it's a subtle move of location. And while it could be easy for us to just get locked into this kind of one another within the community, how we treat each other in here, we should treat each other well here, we should extend hospitality to one another here, we should take care of one another in here, Paul does something very subtly in verse 17 and in verse 18. In verse 17, Paul transforms the passage. Paul transforms the passage into an inclusive statement. And look at verse 17. Do not repay who? What's the word? Anyone. Evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of who? Who? Right. And if you have an NIV version, it says all. Do what is right in the sight of all. Now think about what Paul is doing there. In this moment, Paul is not only affirming the community, the congregation, Paul is also affirming the neighbor. Paul is also affirming the enemy. All human beings, including enemies, are found to be good in our eyes if we have allowed the Spirit to refocus our eyes differently. The response of the community towards those on the outside is not of condemnation, but of listening. Love of what is good becomes the motivating factor for understanding the outside world, for listening to others. And so then in verse 18, Paul can say that peace will become the expression of this love, that the community will stand, the congregation will stand alongside the world, offering and making peace with the neighbor. Not through some form of coercion, not through some form of victory, But instead, what Paul is trying to do is he's trying to slowly shift this idea as we think of enemies and as we think of others who are different than us. Paul is slowly shifting this idea to say, you no longer have to take revenge on people. And we think about that word, revenge. We think about maybe how many times we've used that word, revenge, in our lifetime because of what something has been done to us. And we think, what? I have to get back at them. Well, I'll show them what they did to me. I completely understand this kind of way of thinking. I do this very easily. I'm going to walk very gingerly here, not because of y'all. I love y'all, but because I know that my mom will listen to this. I grew up as a son of Rita Franz, which meant we don't forget, we just get even. That's who I grew up as. And so you harm me, you harm one of my family members, you harm a friend. It's not, oh, bygones be bygones. Brother, sister, I am a son of Rita Franz. We get even and we figure out a way to do it very well. But Paul here is saying this. Paul's saying, if your life has been refocused, if you live into the conversion that you live into, that your baptism means something, then revenge is no longer a part of your vocabulary. That actually peace becomes a part of your vocabulary. And if you struggle with this, if you're struggling with this kind of thought, you think of somebody right now who you wouldn't mind getting some revenge with. Last week I talked about these practices. Here, just about 10 minutes ago, we practiced communion. We broke bread. We took of the cup. A practice we do weekly that brings us to the table of the Lord and reminds us that the practice of God was not like Zeus and the Greek gods, which is take a lightning bolt and strike you down, but instead was giving of his only son. And so here a few minutes ago, we practiced communion in which we broke bread and we took the cup and we were reminded of God's grace and hospitality towards us. You don't think that what we do in here matters for out there? That is one of the most revolutionary practices we do. It is forming us outside to get away from the narrative of revenge. And Paul says here that you no longer live in a narrative of revenge, but instead that the reconciled community finds its identity not in the societal notions of peace through victory, which was the very foundation of Roman peace, but instead is found through the transformative love of God towards all creation. So what we see is the instruction of Romans 12 calls into question any framework that we have been living in, any framework that we have created for ourselves, any framework that we have rationalized and said, this is okay. That Romans 12 calls in to question any of that. It calls in to question for the Roman church this idea of Pax Romana. And while Pax Romana may be foreign to us in our current context, the idea of victory is not. The idea of peace through victory is not. And more specifically, how we have treated others can be a critique of us if we're not careful. How we have treated others, what we have said to others, how we have treated our neighbor, how we have even treated the enemy can be a critique of our congregation and us if we're not careful. Are we embodying the reconciled community of Christ? Are we embodying this very wave of people who have become refocused because of the Spirit of God? Or are we still living in a tired, old system? one that says peace through victory, one that says peace can only come with war. War with the person next to you, war with your neighbor, war with the people different than you. This is what we're dealing with here, and this is what Romans 12 is doing. And another thing this does is this. Another issue that Romans 12 kind of puts in front of us is how we think about evangelism, how we think about outreach. If we think that everything happens inside the church building and that we have to bring people into the church building in order for them to be saved, you know what I'm talking about. Like, we have to come in and pull them in, and once we pull them in, we can save them. If we think that way, that we think somehow in these doors there's some magical thing that happens, we kind of have this way of walling ourselves off from the community around us, walling ourselves off from our neighborhood, and actually forgetting the very thing that God put inside of us to be God's witness to the world and to the neighbor. And it reminded me of a story as you think about kind of how we can just think that we have to bring people in or wall people off. A few years ago, I think I told you this, my dad, when he turned 70, we took him on a trip to Germany. My whole family did. The kids didn't go, but the adults went. And we took my dad on this trip. And one of the cool things that I learned on this trip was we had this tour guide who followed us. And we went into Switzerland, and I hope I really get this correct. But I had written down some notes about it. But this lady was named Miss Sue. She was great. But she was telling us about Switzerland. And Switzerland is this really cool country. It's beautiful. It's technologically advanced. It is clean. It's just unbelievable. One of the interesting things as we were driving through the mountains, she began to tell us about Switzerland's national defense. And if you know anything about the history of Switzerland, they've been invaded many times over their long history. They've been controlled by others. And so now what they have is they have this kind of national emergency plan in place to where they have these shelters throughout the entire country in the mountains and around to, at a push of a button or whatever, they actually have enough shelters that can shelter the entire country of Switzerland. So all the people, citizens of Switzerland, can, if something were to happen, that they could go into these shelters and be completely walled off the rest of society. Like, they can basically wall themselves off, which would be quite a shame for us if we think about it. Because if we think about all the things we like from Switzerland, Swiss Army knives, their chocolate. I mean, what would you do without their chocolate? But I don't know. But that's their kind of mindset. It is, if something were to happen or if something comes to pass, that they can wall themselves off. And I think sometimes as a church and a congregation, we do the same thing. We have a tendency sometimes if bad stuff is happening out there or the way that we talk about out there, we kind of wall ourselves off from the rest of our neighbors and from our coworkers because it's like all the bad is out there. And yet we look and say, what is the world missing by you not being who you are called to be in Christ Jesus? What is the world missing that can't see that peace and love and hospitality can bring about a new way? If we see that peace works through victory, then the way that we treat others change. The way that we have relationships change. But if we're willing to listen to Paul here, and if we're willing to believe that blessing others instead of cursing them has the opportunity to transform them, if we're willing to believe that feeding our neighbor, feeding the enemy, has a way of transforming relationships. By the way, none of that happens in here. It happens out there. It happens in your workplaces. It happens in your neighborhoods and in your houses and in the conversations you'll have here in a minute at lunch. All of this matters, and Paul says, what we do in here is not left in here for just us. What we do in here has the power to transform the world. So what society and even we have to realize is that every act that we do, everything that we may see as mundane, a conversation, the way that we look at somebody, all of those things we don't really think about. Let's think about what Jesus said in Matthew 25. A cup of water, the giving of a piece of bread, has the potential to reconcile someone to you. Well, Lord, when did we see you? When you gave me a cup of water, when you put clothes on me. It is the reconciling potential which the church and its people embody on an everyday basis. When you leave here a people reconciled. But the question remains, do we believe in this power? As we think about refocusing, as we think about what we love, as we think about who we are, do we believe that we can take this out there, that we can bless and not curse? That we can give and not withhold, even to the people we can't stand the most. Do we believe that that has the power to change lives, or do we still live in an old mantra of Pax Romana, that I have to have victory over you in some way? Maybe that looks like me just ignoring you. I don't know. Paul seems to think that doesn't work. And so I'm going to end with this. In the end, if our lives are refocused, I'm going to put this up here. In the end, if our lives are refocused and reoriented towards God's love, grace, and mission, we will live differently. We will live as people who see the goodness of God in the land of the living. We will see and act as, not if, but that, the goodness of God is in the land of the living. That's what God has called us to today. If our lives have been refocused on Him, if we love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, strength, and mind, then we will begin to see the goodness of God in the land of the living. And I didn't come up with that. Someone else did. Hence why it's in quotes. I'm not that good. But this can be difficult, and this can be tough. And there may be, right now, you're thinking in your head, but Russell, you don't know what so-and-so did to me. You're right, I don't. You don't know how I'm feeling right now. You're right, I don't. This is not an easy task for any of us. We still struggle with each of these things. I struggle with blessing instead of cursing. Believe me, I'd much rather get revenge on people. But God has called me in Christ to something different, and the same to you. And so the beauty of this is Paul doesn't say you're in this on your own. I keep reminding you of this, but we're in this together. And maybe you are struggling with someone. There are people next to you who want to hear your story, who will pray with you, who will talk with you. There are elders who will be up front, who will pray with you through these times in your life as you read these words and read and go, Paul, you don't know what I'm going through right now to be able to say that. I like the old system if it means I can get even. Refocusing is a lifelong thing, but we're called to not just live it in here, but to live it out there, to live differently, to be the different neighbor to the people around us, to love our enemies, to bless and not curse, and to give a meal when a meal is needed. If you have any needs this morning, come now as we stand and as we sing.